more spending, and higher taxes. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. Those are the main takeaways from President Biden's budget blueprint released yesterday.
The $6 trillion budget proposal by the Biden White House urges Congress to fund several Democratic priorities, from the hotly debated multi-billion dollar infrastructure bill to the $1.8 trillion American Family Plan, which would boost spending on social programs. It also, by the way, calls for sharp increases in discretionary program spending, including more than $8 billion to boost the CDC, $10 billion to fight the opioid epidemic.
Fox's Kevin Cork, the White House maintains the proposal invests directly in the American people and will strengthen the economy. Republicans are sounding the alarm on inflation. Republicans in the Senate may have blocked efforts to create an independent commission to study the riot at the U.S. Capitol, but Democrats say that won't stop them from pursuing the truth.
Senators should rest assured that the events of January 6th will be investigated and that as majority leader, I reserve the right to force the Senate to vote on the bill again at the appropriate time.
Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer also says a select committee could be established. The GOP argues the events of January 6th are already being investigated by Congress and the Justice Department. More than 400 people have been charged in the Capitol breach, and suspects are still being rounded up. Sean McHugh of Northern California is accused of pushing a large metal sign into a line of uniformed officers. He's also suspected of spraying an unknown yellow chemical at officers. A cluster of new coronavirus infections has a neighborhood in southern China locked down. Officials are going door to door to administer tests. Others nearby are being urged to limit outdoor activity. America's listening to Fox News. He'll likely spend the rest of his life behind bars. The illegal immigrant found guilty of murdering Iowa college student Molly Tibbetts. Sentencing for Christian Rivera is set for July.
As this murder trial was winding down, it was a stunning moment when Rivera took the stand in his own defense, revealing a shocking account of what he claims really happened. Two masked armed men forced him to follow Tibbetts, killed her, and then left Rivera in the cornfield with Tibbetts' body in his trunk. The prosecution says there's overwhelming evidence pointing towards Rivera, and the two men are figments of Rivera's imagination. Rivera's defense says the state cut corners, felt pressure to pin this case on Rivera, and did not prove beyond reasonable doubt that Rivera is the person that actually stabbed Tibbetts to death.
Fox's Matt Finn. A stockpile of weapons and ammunition has been found at the home of a California man who police say shot and killed nine of his co-workers. Authorities also say they found multiple cans of gasoline and suspected Molotov cocktails.
Early Wednesday morning, the 57-year-old showed up during a shift change, heavily armed, and targeted certain people before turning the gun on himself. Santa Clara County Sheriff Lori Smith.
What we do know is that there were a lot of employees in a certain area. He said to one person who was not an employee, "I'm not going to shoot you," and then shot others.
That was Fox's Claudia Cowan in San Jose. Belt tightening at the U.S. Postal Service could mean layoffs as well as price hikes and service changes. As it grapples with growing deficits, the Postal Service would like to raise rates on first-class stamps from 55 cents to 58 cents. As for job cuts, the Washington Post is reporting that hundreds of management-level employees could be let go. In the past 10 years, overall mail volume has dropped nearly 30%. Pam Puso, Fox News.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, heads up, there is an accident and the left lane is blocked in College Park on the inner loop approaching Route 1, Baltimore Avenue, exit 25. Now into Arlington on 395 southbound. Accident has two left lanes blocked approaching Glebe Road, exit 7. In Dale City, on Route 1 northbound, heads up, all the lanes are blocked because of flooding. You'll find it between Orpridge Boulevard and Bel Air Road. And in Woodbridge, on Route 1 southbound, all the lanes are blocked because of flooding between Prince William Parkway and Bel Air Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid
50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region, scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning. High temperatures still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us on a holiday weekend. Of course, Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial start of summer. But the importance of Memorial Day, of course, remembering our fallen men and women in military service as we honor them this weekend. During the program today, we'll have a couple of ideas on things that you can do this weekend, in particular, saluting women in military service. So that's coming up on the program this morning. Some news off Capitol Hill, though, at the end of the week. Now, you may have thought they were going to head out Thursday night. They had intended to, but there were a couple of key votes that came down. And here's how it all played out on Capitol Hill on Friday. Now, the big one was the whole discussion of a commission to investigate the riots on Capitol Hill on January 6th. They had talked about it, gone back and forth, but at the end of the day, the vote was 54 to 35 Republicans withholding the votes necessary to bring that bill up for debate. Six GOP senators joining with the Democrats left the measure short of the 60 votes needed to proceed. That the bipartisan legislation to establish the independent commission to investigate the January 6th attack at the U.S. Capitol. It fails in the Senate, Republicans staging their first filibuster since President Biden took office to block that plan. The House had approved the measure, as you know, 252 to 175 last week. 35 Republicans had joined all the Democrats in support of the plan. Now, there's a lot of criticism, and of course, there's spin going with the pundits, especially at MSNBC and CNN. But the take on the Republican side, as Mitch McConnell had expressed, he had dismissed the proposal as a, quote, purely political exercise, given that two Senate committees are already looking into the events of January 6th. McConnell called into question how much more a commission would be able to unearth. And as we've seen in the news reports over the past several months, there has been an extensive investigation by the FBI and the Department of Justice and other law enforcement agencies. They are all over it. So the concerns on the Republican side were the potential for it to become politicized and yet another attempt at diminishing former President Donald Trump. So at this point, the Democrats are considering going ahead on their own and having their own probe likely to come out of the House. On China, a $250 billion bill that was designed to make the U.S. more technologically competitive against China. Now, there was an effort to rush the bill through on Friday, but delayed the vote on that one until next week. So the China bill is not dead. The China tech bill will be taken up once again after Memorial Day. So that's kind of the latest from Capitol Hill this morning. Fun and games going into the holiday weekend. There was one of those news dumps by the administration, and it's a $6 trillion news dump, and that is the budget proposed by President Biden on Friday. It's a plan that details taxes and spending. It's all for the fiscal year. It begins in October. The 10-year outlook, including the multi-year spending on infrastructure, education, child care, other domestic programs. Now, if you look at the price tag, you've got $6 trillion for the budget, and then you've got all of the other programs that he's been talking about, recovery programs, which total up to another $6 trillion or so. The budget would basically project a federal debt that would increase relative to the size of the economy to a higher level than during World War II. Now, this will likely give Republicans more fodder to attack the tax and spend agenda, as they label it, of the Biden administration. But the numbers are staggering in terms of where this could head and when it will start to ding us, all of us under 400,000 that he promises it won't hit. Wait till those taxes start trickling down. Wait till the corporations pass along all of the higher taxes. Pass it along to the consumers. Watch inflation go through the roof with all of this spending. I mean, it's $6 trillion in the budget. That's the FY22 budget. Then you've got $1.7 trillion for the American Jobs Plan, the $1.8 trillion for the American Families Plan, and the $1.9 trillion for the American Rescue Plan. So add that up. That's a lot of money we don't have. It's going to run up, obviously, the national debt, and it will run up our taxes and the cost of goods. You watch. Even though they say it won't, it will. It is 6:14. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and we will head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. We've got to check the traffic and the weather this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway right now, in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. Between the two beltways on the BW Parkway N95, you won't find any delays either northbound or southbound. Route 50 in Prince George's County is clear between the beltway and the Bay Bridge, east and west. And heads up on 270 southbound, there is a crash in Gaithersburg at 370 exit 9. No delays on the northbound side of 270. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid-50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region. Scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning. High temperatures still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett with Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
54 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:15 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and America is waking up. No, not this morning, but maybe waking up to the Biden administration. Boy, did we get sold a bill of goods. All the things he wasn't going to do that he's doing. Remember the fracking? Oh, I'm not going to stop fracking. Well, we stopped fracking. Killed the Keystone Pipeline. Wasn't going to do that until the first day in office. And then, of course, the court packing. So you have fracking and packing that we weren't supposed to have thrust upon us, but that's the plan from the Biden administration. Well, why do I say America's waking up? Because there is a Fox News poll out at the end of the week among 1,000 registered voters. Only 43% of the registered voters are approving of President Biden's handling of foreign policy. 52% disapprove. When it comes to the immigration issue, 38% approve, 57% disapprove, and when it comes to border security, 40% approve, 56% disapprove. Now, integrity and transparency, a couple of terms that were used against Donald Trump throughout his administration, that Trump was lying and exaggerating and everything else. The Secretary of Homeland Security has continued this one. I don't know why this doesn't have like a half a dozen Pinocchios over at the Washington Post and why more people don't realize that this is just absolutely false, what the Secretary of Homeland Security said again this week.
The president could not have been clearer in his articulation of this administration's position, nor could I have been clearer and continue to be so. Which is the border is closed. And this administration administers and enforces the laws of the United States of America.
It's just not true. I mean, if you see the videos and the live shots that come out of the border, now you won't see them on CNN, but you'll see them on Fox. If you see what's going on down there every day, if you see that the governor of Texas has got to deploy Texas state troopers to protect the border, Arizona's taking similar action, it's just not true that the border is closed. But he continues to try and perpetuate that fallacy. Whatever. So defunding the police, that's another one that I definitely wanted to get this one in. If you missed this one, because you probably won't see it on CNN or MSNBC, mayoral candidate in Atlanta is a strong proponent of defunding the police. His name is Antonio Brown. Well, he's making a campaign speech in Atlanta, and a handful of kids get in the car. I think they were like 12-year-old kids, right? Get in his car to steal his car. And Antonio Brown goes over to the car, apparently tries to get into the car. The kids drag him a little ways down the street, take off with the car. Atlanta police later on have to recover the car. And this is the guy that wants to defund the police. Now, if he had defunded the police, he probably wouldn't have gotten his car back. So here's what Antonio Brown had to say about it after it happened.
One kid was in the driver's seat. Ben attempted to open the door to get him out of the car. He fought with Ben. I had been engaged and tried to get him out of the car. The three other kids were trying to figure out to get in the car or stay out of the car. He started to hit on the gas. Ben let go, and then the kid started to drag me in the car a half of a block.
So Antonio Brown continued to say that he would not press charges against the children. Now, I could understand maybe a 12-year-old, you won't press charges. But in that same sentence, instead of just saying, I'm not going to press charges, he might have wanted to say that I won't press charges, but I am going to see that they get either discipline from their parents in a program or something. Maybe you don't send them to jail or juvenile detention, but you do something to discipline them. But now the sentence ended, I'm not going to press charges. So this is just an example of why crime rates are going nuts over the country. The spikes are crazy in this country in crime rates. And yet here's a guy that wants to defund the police, gets his car stolen by 12-year-olds and doesn't want to do anything about it. Is it any wonder the crime rates are going through the roof? That's just some of the insanity that is going on around the country. I think America's waking up. I hope they are. And we'll see how this all plays out in 2022. Too bad it's not sooner, huh? It is 6:21. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAO. We've got John Gizzi coming up this morning. He's out in California, so he will bring us the latest on the recall efforts with California Governor Gavin Newsom. We're going to talk to John about the vote on Capitol Hill. We'll also talk to John about the president's $6 trillion budget. Some interesting research numbers coming up with Jennifer Harper in terms of some of the media coverage. And we talk about it a lot, but it just seems to get worse. So we'll talk to Jennifer about that. Jim Trusty is going to join us a bit later on this morning. And, of course, Jim does our legal analysis and a very interesting look at the Capitol Commission, this whole discussion and debate about the Capitol Commission. And also a story on Dylan Roof. You may remember Dylan Roof was the shooter in Charleston that killed six members of the African-American community at the church in Charleston. Well, he's been basically put away since 2015 on 33 federal charges, but he and his attorneys were back in court this week, and Jim's going to tell us what that's all about. It's a very interesting legal discussion. Also, a couple of interesting interviews with folks that are involved with the military and Memorial Day and the Veterans History Project. So you'll find some interesting ways to participate in this Memorial Day weekend. So it's all coming up right here on the Saturday Morning Update. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, of course, Memorial Day weekend, unofficially marking the beginning of the summer season. But the true meaning of Memorial Day is to honor the men and women who have given their lives in service while serving in the United States military. A lot of things you can do on Memorial Day weekend. Something special would be to appreciate the history of our American veterans, our American men and women in service. And we are joined this morning by Monica Mohindra. She is a spokesperson for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. Monica, it's so great to have you with us this morning.
Thanks so much for letting me be here.
Tell us about the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress, because there are ways that people can go online and see so much information there.
Absolutely. The project was created unanimously through congressional legislation in October of 2000 with the purpose to collect, preserve, and make accessible the memories of our nation's veterans so that we can hear directly from them. By gathering their human experience of military service, the thoughts, emotions, remembrances of those who served in the U.S. military, the nation, we all better understand the realities of war and our collective history as shaped by those events. Together with individuals and organizations around the country, we have collected over 111,000 different firsthand narratives, ranging from oral histories to original photos, letters and diaries. Spanning from World War I to the current conflicts, this important archive of first-person narratives includes every ethnicity, gender, and conflict. With over 18 million U.S. veterans today, now is the time, as you mentioned, to get involved in participating in the Veterans History Project. And you can do that by going to our website, www.loc.gov/vets, V-E-T-S. You help to preserve our veterans' stories so that we, together, can create a living, lasting memorial to the spirit of service. When veterans sit down with their neighbors or family to create this document of their personal experience, we're not only enriching understanding between people now, but together, you're making an authentic document of history for the future, an ongoing ripple effect. Just as you mentioned, looking to Memorial Day, we just lost former Senator and Navy veteran John Warner, whose interview, by the way, the Veterans History Project has. And oral history is both a process and a product. So not only can you sit with a veteran who's your loved one in your life, in your community, this Memorial Day, you can go to our website, hear his story, sit and remember other veterans, or learn a little bit more about your veterans' experience through those stories already shared. Even if your veteran happens to be deceased, you can use our search box on the webpage, again, loc.gov/vet, to look at granular search terms and understand about where the veterans that you're interested in may have served, or the conflict, or what their type of service was.
So I know this year you have an emphasis on our Gold Star families.
The Veterans History Project has a special collection within its overall mission to engage with U.S. Gold Star families. And the legislation specifically speaks to the idea of Gold Star families being those who are immediately related to someone, a service member, who was lost as a result of war. On our website, you can find more information about that. You can search for those specific collections. You can read blog posts that detail the personal experience of those Gold Star families. In addition to the tools on our website that help you learn how to interview the veteran in your life, there are also tools available on our website to help you interview Gold Star families who are your loved ones and in your community.
And this year you also have a focus on women in military service.
Yes. Women, when you look at the census, the IRS, the VA statistics, make up about 10% of our veterans population. We currently need the public's help. We need your help to reach the women veterans in your life. Our collections are currently about 6% of our overall collections, women to that 111,000. And we could certainly use your help in ensuring that their stories are also truly represented within our collections. Ask that women veteran in your life who maybe hasn't had the chance to share her story yet some gentle questions to get her started in thinking about joining you in this process to create that important historical legacy.
Monica Mohindra at the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress. Thanks very much for the information. Thanks very much for what you're doing. And thanks for being with us this morning. And you have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
You as well. I appreciate the opportunity.
And once again, the website is loc.gov/vets. 6:30 News is next. And in the news at this hour, China has reported 16 new confirmed coronavirus cases, including two authorities said were believed to have been acquired locally. President Biden started the Memorial Day weekend by visiting a rock climbing gym in Northern Virginia as the state lifted all COVID-19 distancing and capacity restrictions at private businesses, and much of the nation pushes towards the greater sense of normalcy. Police have arrested the man accused of shooting and injuring three people in Times Square. He was charged after arriving in New York from Florida, where he was arrested. NYPD said on Friday, Farrakhan Mohammed is charged with attempted murder and multiple counts of assault, reckless endangerment, and criminal use of a firearm. 6:33, time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On 395 southbound in Arlington, crash. Two left lanes are blocked at Glebe Road. In Dale City, Route 1 northbound, all the lanes are blocked for flooding between Orbitz Boulevard and Bel Air Road. On the southbound side of Route 1 in Woodbridge, now all the lanes are blocked between Prince William Parkway and Bel Air Road for flooding. In Gaithersburg on 270 southbound, two right lanes are blocked at Shady Grove. And in College Park on the inner loop of the Beltway, there is a crash. Left lane is blocked approaching Route 1. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid-50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region. Scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning. High temperature still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
54 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Memorial Day weekend on the Saturday morning update. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to Jennifer Harper for joining us on holiday weekend. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. If you listen to the mainstream media, you're going to hear all of these different threats to America. What are the largest threats facing America? If you listen to the politicians, you'll hear it. Well, what do Americans actually think about it?
Well, I've got just the poll to answer that question, and it's actually coming from Fox News this week. And as everybody knows, we live in a very wary nation right now. Our concerns are many, but this particular poll is very succinct, and it's gone into the intensity of all these concerns and asked a lot of questions and the answer that they emerge from. And if you are wondering what the people actually think is the biggest threat to the United States, Rick, it is political division. How about that? This poll found that 64% of all U.S. adults say that political division is a major threat to the nation's stability. And on the general worry scale, this is outranking a dozen other major challenges to a stable U.S. society. And across the board, pretty well, people agree on this. 67% of Republicans agree with this, along with 58% of independents and 65% of Democrats, all agreeing that this whole partisan discord thing is destructive to the nation. And another 26% overall consider political division to be a minor threat. So it's kind of intense up and down the scale here, and that includes 26% of Republicans, 25% of independents, and 28% of Democrats. Again, this is coming from Fox News. And, you know, we also remember that former President Trump was, and a lot of Republicans were very concerned about the stability of our nation's voting system, and so are many of their fellow Americans. This poll, Rick, also found that 51% of the respondents agreed that people voting illegally is a major threat to the United States. I repeat, people voting illegally. This is, again, the wording from a Fox News poll. And another 22% deem it a minor threat. And only 25% say that illegal voting is, quote, not a threat at all. And, again, this is a pretty wide-ranging poll. Similar concerns among the respondents. Majorities felt that socialism, illegal immigration, racism, decaying infrastructure, gun violence, unemployment, and big government were all major threats. According to the majority of the respondents up and down the scale, sizable numbers also felt that these were a minor threat. Again, this is a Fox News survey of 103 registered U.S. voters conducted May 22 through 25. So it's very concurrent. And labeling partisan division as the big threat. Who knew?
So periodically during the day, I check the news on my phone. It's the Apple News feed. And I see more stories about Trump on there than I do about Biden. What is going on in the media?
Well, you're 100% right about that. And our friends over at the Pew Research Center decided that they would do a whole study about some of the news media coverage of President Biden. And my gosh, his coverage was essentially Trumped. And I'll explain that. Here's what Pew has to say. Following an election whose results were fiercely contested and a turbulent presidential transition, former President Donald Trump accounted for a considerable part of the news media's early narrative about the Biden administration. During the first 60 days of the new administration, roughly half of the stories about the Biden administration mentioned Trump in some way. This is again coming from the Pew Research Center, and they were intensely studying this during from January 21st through March the 21st. They said that mentions of Mr. Trump were particularly prominent in stories which alluded to Mr. Biden's political skills and immigration policy. And they also qualified this and said, this study is not an analysis of media bias or evaluating whether the coverage of Biden and his administration was accurate or fair. But again, the media just could not stay away from Mr. Trump during the first 2 months of the Biden presidency.
Probably one of the biggest questions in the country is, will President Trump run again in 24, and should he run again in 24? What's the latest?
Well, the latest is that 63% of Republicans want Mr. Trump to run in 2024. Yes, another poll. It's kind of early in the morning for this, but it's from Reuters Ipsos poll. It was released on Monday. Found that a majority of Republicans still back the 45th president in a very spirited way. Here's what they say. Former President Donald Trump's stronghold over the Republican Party remains. His refusal to concede the 2020 election and calls of widespread fraud have raised doubts about the integrity of its results among his Republican base. Consequently, 56% of Republicans believe the election was rigged or the result of illegal voting, and 53% think Donald Trump is the actual president, not Joe Biden. This is coming from Reuters and Ipsos poll. And Republicans also remain very leery of the election process itself, Rick. And this is a factor which remains of interest to Mr. Trump, along with all of his fans. Only 30% of Republicans feel confident that mail-in ballots were accurately counted, and about 86% of Democrats and 55% of independents agree with that. So anyway, the takeaway message here is that not only do the Republicans think that, yes, voting was rigged, but also they still think 55% think Mr. Trump is still the actual president. And also two-thirds of our Republicans, 63%, think that Mr. Trump should run again in 2024. And this is an opinion shared only by 8% of Democrats, but 23% of independents. This is, again, Reuters Ipsos poll. So kind of good news for Mr. Trump.
Number of folks didn't get the memo there, huh? So we've already had CPAC 2021, but there might be another CPAC 2021?
Yeah, well, I think 2021, one CPAC is simply not enough this year. Yes, there is another CPAC coming up, and it's coming up very quickly. The American Conservative Union has got a significant gathering set to take place July 9th through 11 in Dallas, Texas. Think about that. And they are offering more proof, they say, that the United States has not been canceled by either the liberal or progressive foes. This is CPAC Texas 2021. They've got 20 exhibitors, 38 sponsors, lots of people interested. Fox Nation, the Heritage Foundation are all in on this. And, you know, the Conservative Political Action Conference, well, it's going to happen all over again in July. I was pretty surprised by this, but it follows a similar event in February, Rick, and we all recall that was the site of former President Trump's first public appearance since he left office. And so here's what the organizers have to tell you. It's time to open up America and honor Texas for its courage. If you are tired of blue state lockdowns, Anthony Fauci mask mandates, and Zoom doom, come to CPAC America Uncanceled for a national meeting. And according to Matt Schlapp, you know him as the chairman of the American Conservative Union, he says it's not just about holding a conference. It's about funding grassroots activism around the country, including the centers we've established to try to save America from socialism. The event is branded America Uncanceled because America should never be shut down ever again. These are really important times. So what's going on with that? And if you want to get information, just go to conservative.org. And that's the website of the American Conservative Union. So there you go, Rick. A big surprise, huh?
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting 2022 and 2024, that's for sure. Ronald Reagan lives on. The Reagan Presidential Foundation does some phenomenal work. And you've got a story on Ronald Reagan this week.
Yes, I do. And I often pay attention to what goes on at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. And folks that have gone out there to Simi Valley, California, say that's a fantastic spot. And I noticed that they this week have fired up a very significant speaker series, and they're calling it A Time for Choosing. And all fans of Reagan know that that phrase, A Time for Choosing, refers back to a very famous speech that Reagan once gave on October 27th, 1964. It was built A Time of Choosing, and it was meant to support Senator Barry Goldwater's presidential campaign. And here's what he said, if you want to remember it this morning. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness. That's what Reagan said on the time. So they have themed this speaker series, A Time for Choosing, after that speech 57 years later. And this is what they say. The question is no longer, what would Ronald Reagan do? The question is now, what would Ronald Reagan expect of us? I thought that was pretty significant. Anyway, it got underway this week on Thursday, and some of the folks that are going to be speaking, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Mike Pence will be there, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley. And if you're curious about all of that, you can go to ReaganFoundation.org. That is a great site. It's the presidential Foundation and Institute site. It's always got good stuff to read and look at on there. But this is a pretty good series, and pretty neat people on there. Again, go to ReaganFoundation.org and look for A Time of Choosing, because it started this week, and it's pretty good.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, and you can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. You have a wonderful Memorial Day holiday weekend. 6:45 Saturday morning update. Al BD's checking out the WMAL traffic this morning.
In Prince George's County, heads up, Beltway, inner loop, there is an accident. Left lane is blocked in College Park, approaching Route 1. In Gaithersburg, on 270 southbound, there is a crash. Two right lanes are blocked at Shady Grove Road, exit 7. In Virginia, on 395 southbound, there is a crash. Shoulder is blocked approaching Glebe Road. Dale City, Route 1, northbound, all lanes are blocked from flooding between Orbitz Boulevard and Bel Air Road. And on the southbound side of Route 1 in Woodbridge, all the lanes are blocked for flooding between Prince William Parkway and Bel Air Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cloudy, rainy, and cool to start your Memorial Day weekend. Temperatures today only going to reach the mid
50s, more like March weather rather than late May, getting into the official start of summer. As we go through the afternoon, periods of rain will be likely. We'll continue to have that likely overnight. Lows in the 40s in the outlying suburbs, around 50 downtown for your Sunday. Still, plenty of clouds hanging across the region. Scattered showers likely, heaviest in the morning. High temperatures still in the mid-50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's dropped down to 52 degrees in the nation's capital. 646, Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Memorial Day weekend on the Saturday morning update. Thank you for joining us. And Jim Trusty joins us every week. He is our legal expert, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice, and he is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick.
So, Jim, on Friday, Republicans blocked an independent commission to investigate the attack at the U.S. Capitol. It was a Senate vote on Friday afternoon. The opposition, led by Senator Mitch McConnell, the mainstream media and the liberal pundits will have a heyday with this one. Oh, yeah, they're just trying to protect Donald Trump. However, my take on this would be, had there been a commission, the focus would have been on Donald Trump and not a lot of other important issues that are really the key issues that a Capitol commission should have been looking at.
Yeah, I'm in a lot of agreement with you on that, Rick. You know, I don't think any of us needs to go through the hack exercise of blaming Trump or having essentially a third impeachment. You know, again, to me, we've gone through this territory. You and I have talked about how whatever Trump's words were, they weren't legally inspiring insurrection or conspiracy to commit insurrection. So I don't think we need that exercise of kind of cherry-picking quotes and saying we know what Trump really meant. And I think that's where the Republican opposition comes down. But I will tell you, I think a real panel, I'm talking serious law enforcement scrutiny, would be welcome, because I've seen some things about this Capitol riot or whatever you want to call it that are extraordinary. I mean, I've never seen such a secretive investigation as to a public shooting, and this one in the case of Ashley Babbitt when she came through the window. We never even learned the name of the police officer that fired the gun that killed her as she came in. There was incredible secrecy and actually downright deception when it comes to Officer Sicknick and what happened to him. You remember the fire extinguisher story that was just that, a story. And I think it would be fair game to at least give some sort of attention to the Capitol Police. You know, was deadly force being used reasonably? Was it consistently being employed? Were they consistent when it came to either letting people inside the Capitol or barring them from the Capitol? I mean, many of the hundreds of people that have been charged are charged with breaking and entering. But if they were allowed in by the police, that's an absolute defense. So I think those are really important areas for us to look at in terms of the Capitol Police. You know, their chief resigned early into this process, and I think there's more questions than there were answers. And I would also just say, you know, I'd like to know, is there coordination? Is there leadership that infiltrated the Capitol that day? Are there people that were just professional protesters, more like anarchists than anything else? You know, I think it's fair to analyze kind of the political makeup of the worst from that day. But I think there's a lot to be answered for in terms of how law enforcement dealt with it on January 6th that we're not going to get without some sort of serious scrutiny.
Well, I would share the concern about really finding out who these people were that attacked the Capitol. But isn't there a very intense investigation ongoing on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's been hundreds, over 450 people have been charged so far with a variety of federal offenses. The U.S. Attorney's Office is absolutely taking it extremely seriously, you know, in terms of charging people that broke in and maybe people outside of that. I don't have any problem with, you know, folks that assault police officers. I think conservatives in particular ought to be consistent, right? We shouldn't say it's okay to assault a police officer in D.C. when it's our guy. Just like we oppose it when it happens in Portland or Seattle or anywhere else. So I have no problem with protecting the police, but I do have a lot of issues with exactly where the line is for breaking and entering if the police are letting people in, if there's kind of negotiated entries as opposed to forcible entries. And from the outside, it looks like there might have been both.
want to turn to a story that was surprising this week because it dates back to the 2015 murders of 9 members of a Black South Carolina church in Charleston. Dylan Roof had been convicted and found guilty on 33 federal charges, but his attorneys were in court this week. And what were they saying and where did it go?
Well, they were in court this week for the arguments before the Fourth Circuit, which is the circuit that would preside over a South Carolina trial. Now, what's interesting right off the bat is one of the prosecutors from the case has since become a federal judge on the Fourth Circuit. So when I say it was an appeal before the Fourth Circuit, physically that's true, but the contents of the panel was a little different. It was actually 3 judges from different circuits outside the Fourth because the whole circuit recused itself, knowing their colleague had prosecuted the case. So you got a weird start right off the bat. And there was about an hour and a half worth of oral argument with a variety of issues, but a lot of the issues that were really leaping to the forefront had to do with the penalty phase of Dylan Roof's trial. And I suppose the kind of nerdy reason why I follow this case so carefully is because I was on the Attorney General's Capital Review Committee. We would review, or several of us would review, all of the submissions from U.S. attorney's offices about seeking or not seeking the death penalty. So I got to read some fascinating materials and recommendations from U.S. attorneys handling cases like Dylan Roof's. That was one I was on. The Boston Marathon bombing, the Benghazi defendant. So you'd really see some highly important cases and some interesting background. And so I've always kind of tracked those cases as they went through the system. Rick, the death penalty process we could spend like 6 hours on. I'll give you the 30-second version, which is after guilt is established in the guilt phase of a trial, the jury is then evaluating whether there are aggravating factors like, you know, were there more than one death? Was there substantial premeditation, a prior criminal record? They look at aggravating factors that the prosecution tries to establish and whether there's any mitigating circumstances like, oh, his role was limited or he shows remorse or he was high or drunk. And they balance those and decide whether the death penalty is appropriate. What is very common in that space is for the defense to put on mental health evidence, not insanity, not incompetence, but just to tell a sympathetic story of mental problems or abuses that the person went through in their life. In Dylan's case, after the guilt phase, he fired his attorneys and represented himself on a penalty phase. And that's very unusual, but the breakdown there was not because he thought his attorneys were bad or doing a terrible job, but he felt very strongly that he didn't want mental health information presented as mitigation. He wanted to make it clear that he's a normal guy and he stood by his bizarre political beliefs about race wars. So the judge eventually let him fire his attorneys and represent himself, and, you know, and not surprisingly, I suppose, he ended up getting the death penalty after that phase was completed.
So he's fighting his attorneys about presentation of his mental health issues. Where does this go next?
Well, you never know from the questioning from the judges. That can be a little deceptive, but it looks like they're going to decide kind of a fundamental issue, which is who has the right to make that final decision about foregoing mental health evidence. You know, sometimes the client has an absolute right. The client absolutely gets to decide whether to plead guilty or not guilty. The client absolutely gets to decide whether to testify or not in his own defense. But here they're saying this might be more strategic or tactical. This might be more the stuff that the attorneys get to make the final call on. If they thought that was the best route to get him to a life sentence instead of the death penalty, then that would be a tactical decision. And that's what the court's going to wrestle with. He's a very unsympathetic defendant. I think there's a lot of reasons why the judges are going to want to get to a upholding of the death penalty phase here. But it's an interesting legal question about exactly who controls those big decisions at trial.
I'm not sure that everybody saw this story this week, Jim, but there was a mayoral candidate in Atlanta who was making an address while a handful of sub-teenagers were stealing his car. He's very much in support of defunding the police. The kids steal the car, drag him a little ways down the street with it. Atlanta police have to recover the car, and he decides not to press charges on the kids. What kind of a message is that sending?
A wrong one. I mean, look, you know, these politicians, they're either creating or succumbing to a culture of lawlessness. And I mean, look no further than Portland. Portland is still burning most nights, and the vast majority of charged cases have either resulted in dismissal or will result in dismissal. I think it's something like 550 out of 850 cases are on track to be dismissed, and that's a real message. I mean, that's just one example around the country right now. I like to refer to it as reverse broken windows, which is kind of strange talk, I know. But if you remember in New York, going back probably 30 years now, there was a lot of talk, and this was supported by the academics, of what's called a broken window theory of policing. And it doesn't mean you go out and abusively arrest everybody that moves and do terrible, you know, Orwellian things to the populace. What it basically says is you want to send a message to everyone in that neighborhood that if a window gets broken, you're going to investigate who broke it, but the first thing you're going to do is fix the window. And you're going to set a tone in that community that we're not going to tolerate this kind of damage. We're not going to tolerate crime winning the day. And the message actually works. And I think what we're seeing right now is the exact opposite of the broken windows philosophy. You know, when we had the protest even in D.C., there was talk about, well, you know, you can protest, but don't break the law, don't break the curfew. And then, well, you can break the curfew because, you know, we believe in your cause. And then it was, go ahead and tear down statues. In fact, pour acid on the statues. That's okay. Then it becomes destroying shops, then assaulting people. And ultimately, you talk about people getting murdered. Like, again, go back to Portland and their little place of Chad, where people were murdered without consequence. And, you know, I think it's a straight line expansion of lawlessness that goes back to the political leadership or lack thereof. And I think until we get principled politicians who will stop demonizing the police and stop siding with the mob, it's probably going to get worse. I can't imagine being a police officer right now in Chicago, New York, Philly, Portland, really anywhere that there's woke mayors, progressive prosecutors, and meanwhile businesses and bodies are in harm's way. So this was a small, ironic, almost comical example of the idiocy of defunding police in Atlanta, but it's a national phenomenon that's going to cause real victimhood across the board.
I could understand it if the crime rates remained steady, or maybe for some strange reason the crime rates went down when they defunded the police or thought about defunding the police, but the crime rates are going through the roof in this country.
Right. And look, obviously crime rates are tricky things. You can't attribute it all to one causal factor, or we would have, you know, cured crime a long time ago. But you know, when you see general trends of astronomical rises in violent crime, I think most of us have enough horse sense to realize the answer is not to reimagine or defund police. It's to be smart and aggressive and to, you know, fix the broken window before it becomes something worse. So, you know, I don't know how we get out of this kind of progressive nightmare that we're living in, but it certainly isn't walking away from your own stolen car like this guy did down in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out the mentality behind that one. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer, and I understand you're going to be on with Cavuto this morning.
Yeah, or whoever's standing in for Neil on a weekend, I'm not sure, but supposed to be on at about 10:25 talking about some of the legislation about China and COVID and maybe suing the Chinese communist government. So should be fun.
And that's Fox News Channel this morning around 10:25. Jim, we'll be looking for you then. Thanks much.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
You bet. 7 o'clock news next on WMAL. Back with John Gizzi. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland as well. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.